I'd like you to think about what you throw out in the course of an average day. What's going into your trash? Well, if there are vegetable peelings or coffee grounds or eggshells or even paper towels and Kleenex, you're missing out on an opportunity to compost. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We've talked with Roger Reynolds before about his innovative gardening techniques and what he does with all the great produce he grows. Today we're going to learn about what he does with a lot of his kitchen scraps and how worms turn them into a great garden input. And Roger, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
A pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
I know a lot of people are interested in worm composting. As you listen, you may be interested in as well. Maybe you're thinking about starting a bin. Maybe you already have and have some things to share. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly we'd love to hear from you. And so we're talking composting and worm composting. And I know a lot of people are wondering, how is worm composting different from regular composting?
Right. You end up with a similar result in terms of you're taking organic material, dead plant material, kitchen scraps, whatever, and trying to get it back to inorganic matter, black gold. But what's really different is that, one, we can do it in the house. So you probably wouldn't want to actually have a compost pile in the house, but you can do worm composting in the house. You can also do it outside, but most people do it inside. And so typically we're using either a plastic or wooden container. Plastic, I think, is more common now. 20, 30 years ago, people were using old dresser drawers, a dresser that was going to be thrown away. Mm-hmm. But now it's mostly done in plastic containers. And so a couple different things is, from composting, we're used to hearing about mixing carbons with nitrogens, the browns with the greens, the dries with the wets. With a worm bin, you start out with a really large amount of a carbon material that's their bedding. And most people would be using either shredded newspaper, other shredded paper, or peat moss.
Okay.
And so you're actually going to have this be 6 to 10 inches deep in the bin. And then we're going to have a bunch of worms living in there.
Yeah.
And this is going to be part of their food. And they need a balanced diet. And I like to talk in composting, whether it's worms or regular, that we're looking to get a balanced diet for the insects and the microbes. And I like to think of the carbon materials being like carbohydrates or like potatoes. And then our food scraps have some nitrogen. They have some protein in it. So they're kind of like the veggies and the meat. So we're looking for a balance. Now, we all know about carbon filters helping keep down smells for different things.
Yeah.
Well, this big amount of carbon mass in there is the bedding. It's also the carbon filter. So we've got worms. We have it moist. And then we are going to put our food scraps in there. We need to bury them at least 2 to 3 inches deep. So we want the bedding in our bin to be 6 to 10 inches deep so we can always bury the food 2 to 3 inches down. That's going to keep it from ever having a bad smell. It's also going to keep it from having fruit flies, because fruit flies is one of the things people worry about. But so with a worm bin, a couple differences is it's never going to get hot. Like, people try to get an outdoor compost pile hot. You don't want to get a worm bin hot because you would cook your worms.
That's the basics.
That's the basics. One of the really big advantages to doing worm composting is through the winter, you can have it in your house and have all your have your kitchen scraps going right into an active compost bin.
So what? How much waste can worms, say, take in a week?
Well, depends on how many worms we have. If people do some research on the internet, you'll find all these calculations about how to figure out how much food scraps you produce a week. That'll tell you how much worms you should have. I like to make it a little more simple than that. And so I don't know exactly, like, a typical bin, what I would use for a typical bin, my favorite bin to use, and I make a homemade one. I like a 14-gallon Rubbermaid roughneck container. Okay. And these are these storage containers. It's a 14-gallon. You want a dark color because worms don't like light. And so when you get that size going, you'll probably have more than a pound of worms in there. And it's kind of like fish in an aquarium. As long as their bedding is clean, they're getting a good amount of food, they can take a lot. When I was at, I don't know exactly kind of pounds, but the basic way that you feed worms is in this container, kind of picture like it divided into six compartments.
Okay.
So kind of picture them going clockwise or counterclockwise, but in a circle. And so if you're going to start in one corner, you're going to kind of go down that side, 1, 2, 3, cross over, 4, 5, 6, and then back to 1. And the way you feed those, I like to use, whether it be a rock or a plastic lid from something that will not break down. And I mark that, so I'm going to feed them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, going around. And these are my compartments for feeding. And so what I'll do is like a plastic lid off of some bottle. And I'll feed them in compartment 1. So, and you're not dividing it, you're just kind of visually figuring
right,
this out.
Sure.
And bury some food down in there. And make sure it's covered 2 to 3 inches. Then I'm going to put my little marker, a stone or a lid, over spot 2. The next time that I have a cup or 3 cups or 4 cups of stuff that I want to give the worms, then I will bury that in compartment 2 and then move my lid to 3. So this little marker helps me keep track of where I'm feeding. Now, as long as that's buried 2 to 3 inches down, when I get all the way around there, and that might be a week, that might be 2 to 3 weeks, when I get back to spot 1, when I dig down in there to put more food in, if there's still a bunch of food left, then I need to wait. So we don't have to do any calculations, which is when we get back to spot 1, if there's still food there, I need to wait until they've eaten that up. And then you don't need to do any calculations. You just are feeding them at the rate that they can eat.
So what do you do with the food that... that's left over there, if you're waiting.
If you've got scraps, but your worms aren't ready to take it. You know, if we also have an outdoor compost pile, then we can put it outside. And one of the things, I remember taking the Master Gardener class, and a woman, this is just a funny story, a woman in the class had froze all of her kitchen scraps through the winter in her freezer, and then in the spring she was thawing them out to put them in her compost pile, and her husband was kind of laughing at her, and I said, well, she's like, well, you know, I needed to keep them. And I went, well, what would have happened if you would have just put them on your compost pile? She said, well, they would have frozen. I said, well, that's kind of what you did. So we can always add stuff to an outdoor compost pile through the winter. It freezes, but when we put it down there, just put some carbon, some straw, some leaves on top of it, so you're still adding it in layers. In the spring, it'll thaw out and take off.
Oh, boy. Roger Reynolds, our guest today. He's an innovative garden educator and talking with us today about worm composting, and certainly inviting your questions and comments as we move along today. Have you experienced worm composting? Maybe you already have a bin. Tell us about it. Or maybe you're thinking about starting one. Have some questions about it? Roger can certainly help. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. You know, the bin sounds like a... kind of a cool ecosystem in a way. Are there other beneficial creatures living in there along with the worms?
Absolutely. For sure there are fungi and bacteria. And it depends. There will definitely get to be things, and some of them come off of eggs that are on the food products that we put in there. And I've been doing this since about 2000, so 14 years, going on 14 years. And a couple things... If people may put these outside or they may create one, you can do it out of cinder blocks outside. You can use like dead leaves for the bedding. But the problem, one of the concerns of bringing out material from outside in, particularly like leaf duff or leaves, is that you may bring in actually some predators to the worms.
Oh.
So if you're bringing that stuff in, you should sterilize it. And that's not the most fun process because you need to sterilize it in the oven at 180 degrees for an hour. And your house is going to smell very earthy. So if you like that earthy fall smell, but if it's a little strong, in my opinion. So there can get to be springtails and other bugs that are living in there, but the people don't need to worry about this. The worms and the other bugs that actually live in there, or the bacteria and fungi, it is an interesting little ecosystem. They all want to be in a dark, moist place. So there need to be some air holes in the bin, but they're small air holes, or I cover them with screen. But the bugs or the whole ecosystem in there, they don't want to leave that place. So it's not like you're going to take off the lid and a bunch of guys are trying to get out.
Okay.
I think the five different the top five reasons people might do this, kind of their goals or reasons for doing it, would be to compost, to have a composting bin where you're able to keep composting landfill, keep stuff out of the landfill. So people in apartments can do this, or if you don't have a yard where you want or could have a compost pile. Another reason is to get the worm poo. It's a fantastic fertilizer. Other people, fishermen, wanting to actually kind of grow their own bait. The worms used for this are red wigglers or red worms. And that's one. Also, I think it's a lot of fun. It's kind of cool to have this little ecosystem and you're watching what's happening. And to watch the peat moss or the newspaper kind of turn gray and then blacker. It's really amazing to see this process over a few months. And then the other reason is just if you've got kids, this is a great science project, kind of a life cycle circle of life project to watch.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Those red wigglers, now they'll breed, or will they breed in your bin so that you keep...
Absolutely, they breed in your bin. Worms actually reproduce faster than rabbits.
Oh.
Now, they're not going to overpopulate the bin, but like you're not going to run out of room, but... So they kind of self-regulate, but they are definitely, if you start with, like, a lot of times you can get, like, in the Master Gardener classes where I first was introduced to this, and somebody had a worm bin, brought it in, talked about it, and they gave each of us probably about half a cup of worms. Well, starting with half a cup of worms, which would be like going to the bait shop and buying a couple containers would be about the same. In 6 months, you'll probably have a full population, which will be 1 to 2 pounds of worms in there. Yeah. And after you get to that point, they'll be eating quite a bit. And at that point, you could make yourself another bin or you can start giving worms away either to fishing buddies or to someone else or to gardening buddies that want to compost. But I can't remember. I remember it was they will increase their population 400-fold, but I don't remember if that was in a month or if that's in a year, but they reproduce faster than rabbits.
Roger Reynolds, our guest. You can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Robert and Nina. Hi, Robert. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Glad to talk to you. I'm just wondering, I recycle everything that I have, but the one thing I can't recycle and I have to throw out every year, every week, is cat litter.
Kitty litter.
Is there anything you can do with this stuff?
There are a couple of things. Are you using the clay kitty litter or the wood shaving based kitty litter?
The clay.
Okay. The clay would not work for worm composting because it's really, and I don't even know what all is in the clay stuff, but I think it's a bunch of clay. If you were using the wood based stuff, then you could compost it either outside or in a worm bin. Mm-hmm. But you're already managing a litter box, so you know how to be safe with that. So I wouldn't recommend putting this, if you were composting kitty litter or dog manure, I wouldn't recommend putting that in the garden, but a really great safe place to put that once you compost it would be around perennial beds or particularly around shrubs, and put it down right before you're going to put down 2 to 3 inches of a new wood mulch.
Oh.
Because you almost never dig in there.
Mm-hmm. That makes good sense. Thank you, Robert, for calling. Appreciate it. Roger Reynolds, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, as we talk worm composting on Garden Talk and all kinds of other great shows here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Visiting Worm Composting 101 Issues with Roger Reynolds. Great to have him along. Thank you so much for listening in. Join us at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Kate in Madison has a question for you, Roger. So let's go to Kate. Hi, Kate. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm just calling to ask about the effects of invasions of worms and what effect or if there's any thought being given to how people might compost without the worms getting out. What's your thoughts on that?
All right. Good question, Kate. One I've heard before and one that I've done some research on. The main invasive worm that we're hearing about in our northern forests, both northern Wisconsin and for sure in Canada, is actually a night crawler. So these are the red wigglers are a small earthworm that are not the ones doing that major damage. But I still was concerned. And I talked to Phil Pelletieri, a regular guest on this show, and he said in his opinion he would not be worried about the red wigglers being in the environment. They're already there, and that they're not something he would be worried about. But I think, you know, listen to when he's on with Larry again and call in and ask him that.
Yeah, they're already in our environment
yep.
here.
There's some debate also about. Yes, for quite some time we didn't have worms here, but there's some debate of did humans bring them back to our region or are they actually moving north after the last ice age?
Interesting. Thank you very much, Kate, for calling. Appreciate it. James posted a photo on our Facebook page of a huge worm composting setup with the comment, "You won't believe the setup at my office. Green Corridor Castings is just getting off the ground. We have 15 to 20 of these bins using reishi tea and coffee grounds."
Okay.
I'll have to post or get that up here.
Okay.
We'll take a look at it. Some very large bins, apparently.
Okay, yeah, I haven't seen the picture. But, yeah, there are commercial worm composting facilities. I don't remember where he was. You can buy worm castings or worm poo, in 20-pound bags, 5-pound bags. Various garden centers will have it. Will Allen in Milwaukee does worm composting at his facility. I can't remember the name of it right now. Growing Power. There we go. Those are large. Yeah, they
large bins.
Yeah. So they're using reishi tea, which I don't know much about.
And coffee grounds.
Coffee grounds, we don't always think about. Coffee grounds are high in nitrogen. They're great for the garden, great for the compost. They're from beans. Beans are high in protein. Protein is like nitrogen. And so I wonder if they're also adding some other bedding. But yeah, all of this, you know, coffee shops are springing up all over the place. And it's always great to have that stuff being utilized and staying in the life cycle as opposed to going to the landfill.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We have Norm in Wapaka up next with a question. Hi, Norm. Thank you for calling.
You're quite welcome. Good morning.
Morning.
My concern is, or my problem is that I've been through the worm composting situation more than once, and I've gotten rid of the trays. Well, this last time I got rid of the trays, I said, I'm not going to do this again because my house fills with fruit flies. So I've taken the trays, I've cleaned them out, let them air dry, et cetera, start again, and not too long from that time, I've got fruit flies in the house, and it was just too aggravating to continue on. What was I doing wrong?
Did you make your own bin, or did you buy something? You're calling them trays.
No, I bought the trays, the plastic, black plastic round trays.
Okay. My website is infiltratinglandscapes.blogspot.com, and we'll mention that again, and probably Judith will put it up there.
Yeah, I think it's up on our Facebook
page. There's
a link
on Facebook already. Thanks, Judith. So fruit the two biggest concerns people have are smell and fruit flies. And fruit flies, there are different commercial bins or other people teaching, and fruit flies can come into the worm bin from two different routes. One, the stuff that you're putting in there already has fruit fly eggs on it. And if you're worried about that, or if it's been sitting on the counter, bananas are a real common cause of this. If you already see, if it sat on the counter too long, you see fruit fly larvae, if you know you have fruit flies, you can put it in the, put that material in the microwave for a minute or two, cook it, that'll kill them. You can cook it on the stove. You could put it in the freezer for 24 hours or more and freeze it. Then let it get back to room temperature before you give it to the worms. That will kill possible fruit flies that you're introducing. But if you have fruit fly problems, you, or the other route they could come in is if they're actually getting into your bin through the air holes. Now, if people go to my website, I have a handout on the right-hand side, partway down under handouts, about making your own bin. And I recommend drilling 5/64-inch holes for the air holes around the base and a 1-inch and 4 1-inch holes on top. But if you go to your local hardware store, in their window screen department, get the finest plastic mesh that they sell. And it might be a window mesh, or it might actually be stuff that's used for doing body work on cars. Either one will work. Mm. If the tray, if the setup that you have has holes that are big enough that a fruit fly could get into it, buy this mesh, and using duct tape works great. Tape this mesh over those holes so fruit flies cannot get in and also cannot get out. Now, for anyone that, so that will stop them getting in both by food and also getting in by the holes. But for anyone that has a fruit fly problem, and I have had that, I can tell you how to eliminate it in a bin without getting rid of it.
Okay.
The basic is we need 1 to 2 inches of fresh bedding material on top of everything. So if you have the different trays, you might actually clear it. There are trays, I like to call them worm pagodas. I put a picture up of one. They're actually stackable trays. The bottom one, for people that don't know what the setup looks like, the bottom one will catch the moisture that runs out. It usually has a spigot. Then there's 4 to 8 trays that you keep rotating. These worms are top feeders, so they want to be in the top one or two where you're putting food in. And then as the trays work their way down, the worms will come out of them, and the most finished stuff will be in the bottom. Every so often, you take a tray out of the bottom, dump the worm poo out. Usually, it doesn't have any worms in it or very few. Then put that as your new tray. That's how these work. So if you have a stackable system, which you said you do, get a fresh tray. You're going to put food in the second tray down, not the top one, and put food in there for a month or so for the worms. Cover it some, but put another tray on the top. And if you have your bin, like I described, the Rubbermaid bins, what you basically need to do is use peat moss, put dry peat moss 1 to 2 inches thick in that top tray or across the entire surface in a bin.
Mm-hmm.
So you've given the worms enough food for 1 month or more. You're going to cover this with 1 to 2 inches of dry peat moss, and you're not going to open it for a month. What this does is the fruit flies will hatch. Their larvae go wherever they go to hatch. But when the fruit flies come up, they no longer want to be in that bedding. So they're going to crawl out of the bedding, and they already crawled out to do their hatching. So they're going to be above the bedding in that airspace. Fruit flies with wings are not going to be able to crawl down in to get to anything to eat. So they're going to die. And so there'll be a cycle of eggs to hatch. It might take you 1 to 3 months to get through this whole cycle, but the worms eat the bedding. They eat the peat moss. The dry peat moss on top is going to absorb excess moisture that condenses on top. So you're going to be able to leave them for 1 to 3 months. And so after a month, open it up a little bit. If fruit flies fly out, close it and forget it for another month. So within 1 to 3 months, you can solve a fruit fly problem in the bin, and now you know how to not get them again. How's that sound?
Okay, I'll consider buying another amount of trays and starting again.
All right.
All right, good luck.
Thanks, Norm. Beth in Richland Center, hi, thank you for calling.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Beth.
My question, I have a small question. You know, is it okay to worm compost tea and tea bags? But my larger question is, I travel a lot, and if I start worm composting, am I going to have to find some nice friend to worms sit for me.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first thing, absolutely, tea bags, absolutely. And if you get the tea bag with the little bitty staple, it's metal. It's going to break down in time. It's not going to poke your finger. So I wouldn't worry about that at all. And I'll come back to moisture in a minute. I don't know that you really need to be adding undrunk tea, because you don't need to add a lot of moisture once you get the bin going. I would say worms are one of the easiest pets out there. And they're really not lap pets, so you don't have to worry about giving them attention. They really don't want it. What I tell people, if you really want to have worms, and there are people who just really want to be worm parents and have worms, the best or the easiest method is they need to be fed every holiday.
Yeah.
So, and does that make it easy? And if you're going to go away, just how I described managing them to get rid of fruit flies, they can easily be left for 1 to 3 months. If you know you're going to go away for a month or two, give them an extra amount of food, put some bedding on top, and they won't mind your absence at all.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That's a perfect pet for me.
There you go.
They might not even know you've been gone, Beth.
No, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much.
So I'd like to talk about moisture a little bit, because the other thing that scares people, and it can happen, but it's easily managed, is they're worried about getting a bad smell. Well, I already talked about that you have a lot of bedding, and that's really a carbon filter, and you bury stuff. But our food scraps, particularly our vegetable scraps, are anywhere from 75 to 90% moisture. So as the worms eat these, you actually end up with extra moisture in the bin. Some of the directions for making bins out there talk about drilling holes in the bottom. I tried that. I do not find that an easy management technique, because what happens is the moisture drips out, but now you have to have a tray to catch the moisture, and you have to keep that moisture cleaned up, because that moisture is rich in nutrients. It will start to smell, and fruit flies can live in it and off of it. So I actually don't drill a hole in the bottom, but I like to keep, that's why I like these 14-gallon bins, is I actually put a brick under one end and a board, so it's sitting at a slant at a couple inches high on one end. That makes the moisture slowly go to one end. And now I will use any food cardboard, which we're not supposed to put into recycling. This is a way to actually get to compost it. And what I'll do is on the end that's downhill that has the moisture, you just at the very edge along the plastic, you can just slide a newspaper or a pizza box, a pizza round, any food cardboard, slide that all the way down in so that it's touching the bottom. All the bedding for the worms needs to be moist, and this will wick up any excess moisture. And when that one's wet and they're starting to eat it, you can just work that into the bedding, shove another one down in there. And by keeping that management technique of getting the cardboard to get wet or newspaper, it'll absorb that moisture. You won't have a smell, and then it keeps it under control.
Very cool idea. We had a question from Bill on Facebook. I'm not clear on the base, the shredded paper of the worm bin. Roger talks about the base and then directs us to bury the food scraps. You bury the food scraps into the waste, correct?
Yeah, yes. Yep, and I call it the base or the bedding. I would call it the bedding or the base. I usually call it bedding. So what was the question?
So I guess you bury the scraps in this.
Oh, yes.
In the shredded paper.
Right. So you can use shredded newspaper or peat moss are the most common. You can also use coconut coir or however you say that. Mm-hmm. That needs to be gotten wet. And the newspaper or the peat moss before you ever put worms in it. And it needs to be just like a compost pile, the wetness of a wrung out sponge. And the real practical application there, a test, is if you pick it up and squeeze it, a couple of drops of water should come out, but not a stream of water. Okay. So everything needs to be wet. Peat moss is actually going to be kind of compacted or have less air spaces than if you shred newspaper. So if you put newspaper in, probably about a month in, you're going to need to add a fair amount more. You want this to stay 6 to 10 inches deep, but you don't want to use a garbage can. You don't want it 2 feet deep, because these are really surface worms. They only really want things 6 to 10 inches deep. They're not going to be going down 2 feet deep. But so you start with a bin, you get your bin, whether you buy it or whether you make your own, And then you need to make the bedding and get it wet. And that needs to be 6 to 10 inches deep. And then you can start burying your food 2 to 3 inches deep in this. And the worms are going to eat everything. Does that, clear it up?
Yeah, I think that clears it up very well. Gary and Iron River had this question that you mentioned, a 13-gallon roughneck container for the binner. I think it was a 14-gallon roughneck container. I can't find that listed anywhere on the web. So could you describe more fully the size and shape of the container?
Okay. It is a – I mean, Menards has them. Farm and Fleet has them. It is – Rubbermaid is the name brand. Mm-hmm. Roughneck is the model or whatever you mm-hmm. say. It is a Rubbermaid Roughneck 14-gallon storage container.
And that's what you use.
That is it. I looked at the label last night before I came in today. It is Rubbermaid Roughneck 14-gallon. You should be able to find that.
Okay. There we go. And it's not round. Is it round? No.
No, it's a rectilinear.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Let's see. Reb in Dundee, Wisconsin. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. This is Rebecca.
Oh, hi, Rebecca. Okay.
Hi.
That's all right. My question is, okay, so I go ahead and do this worm composting. How do I harvest what's being composted without killing all the worms?
Great question. And that's the last part is, and it depends, what your goal, but to harvest the worm poo, and we do need, eventually all of the bedding will be eaten up and you've added a lot of stuff to it and that will be eaten up and you have black gold. This is some of the best fertilizer that we can get. And harvesting, the typical way that people harvest is you pull the bedding and the worms and everything out, put them on a plastic sheet or like the couple of the lids to these containers and make a pile. The worms don't like being dry and they do not like being exposed to light. So you make a big pile of this and you leave it 20 minutes or so and the worms are going to start going down inside. And then you can take and scrape 1/2 inch to 1 inch off the top till you start getting down to worms again. And then you put that wherever you want to collect your worm poo and then leave it another 10, 20 minutes. I'll actually do like 3 piles on 3 lids and then I can kind of just keep going round and round. And then eventually you'll get down to where there is just a lot of worms and very little worm poo. You put the worms back in the container, give them new bedding, and that's how you harvest.
And you start all over.
Yep, you start all over. I have come up with a little different method, which I think we have time for me to describe. I kind of consider the whole bin kind of a conveyor belt. And I talked about having one end high and one end low. And my high end will be the finished end. And my lower end is my feeding and my new end. And so what I do is I don't feed in that. Like if you picture this thing in six sections, the highest 2 sections at that end, I don't feed there and I feed more at the 2 lower sections. Mm. And so what I do is eventually once they eat all the peat moss and stuff, it gets lower. And so I'll push the majority of the bedding back to one end. That's the used up stuff. And then I only put new bedding and new food at the lower end and they will keep coming to the new food. And so that higher end, I can scrape 2 to 3 inches off of that after it's been back there a couple weeks. I'll scrape 2 to 3 inches off. And then when I start hitting worms in that, I'll stop. And then I just kind of keep moving that up and kind of consider it like a conveyor belt going through my bin.
Mm.
Okay, kind of like a wok. You put the stuff that's cooked.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, exactly. A WOK walk. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
And we have posted, you've given us some great information that we have posted up on my Facebook page.
Yep.
That really helps in this whole process. Rebecca, thank you so much. Jim in Swamigo, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I've got a question and a little problem. My wife and I just started a worm composting bin about a week ago.
Yep.
And actually 3 of them, and they're all, each unit is 18 gallons. And plastic bin, it's a slate blue color.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got about a pound of worms in each bin,
mm-hmm.
and about 4 inches 4 or 5 inches of bedding in each bin. But the worms want to keep climbing up the sides and climbing onto the cover,
okay,
trying to get out. Not all of them, but a few every,
a
especially
few
at night.
Okay. What are you using for bedding?
The newspaper.
Okay.
Newspaper, one part newspaper, 3 parts water.
Wait, what? Wait, 1 part newspaper, 3 parts water?
Yeah, when we mix it,
okay,
according to the book that we read,
How
Eat My Worms.
Now, is there standing liquid in the worm bin?
Oh, no, there is not.
Okay, because that would, I would tip it if you can. Make sure there's no, so a couple things that make worms want to, so a few worms, they're kind of like Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Mm-hmm. A few of the worms will always go exploring. If it's just a few, it's not a big deal. If it's a lot of them, there are two things that worms really don't like. And one is the onion family. I would not give them any onion, garlic, shallots, any of that product. That, I have done that. I learned the hard way. If you actually want to see how many worms you have, put onions down in there and they will all come up.
Okay.
So if you've put any onion product in there, that could be a problem, onion family. The other thing you shouldn't feed them is citrus. There's actually a chemical in citrus that is toxic to worms. So if you put any citrus peels in there, that could be a problem too. Otherwise, too wet is the other reason that usually gets them coming up. But there'll be a few voyagers.
Okay, there'll be a few.
Yep.
When you start out a new system.
Yeah.
There will always be a few that like to go exploring, but they usually aren't, they're not actually usually getting out. They're just kind of, they're not get out. They're just kind of looking around in there, right?
Some got out through the vent holes. The vent, the directions we got, they said drill the directional vent holes at a quarter of an inch.
Yeah.
And sometimes there'll be a few that'll be up under the cover on the lip of the container. And once in a while, a couple will slip out through the vent holes on the side.
If you heard me talk about earlier, or you go to my website, infiltratinglandscapes.blogspot.com, if you get some plastic window screen, small as possible, and tape it over those holes, then they can't get out there again, and fruit flies can't get in.
Yeah.
We had a call earlier about cat litter, and cat litter, if you have cats, you know how you manage your cat litter. If you're going to compost it, you would need to use those same safety skills. Then if you're then going to, where you're going to put that cat litter, I wouldn't put it into a food garden or an annual flower bed. I would put it under wood mulch around shrubs or perennials where you don't dig that often. But if you have cats, you know how to manage this, and you can look up more information on the internet.
Always a thank you, Jim, for calling. I appreciate it very much. And Roger, always a pleasure. Always learn a lot when you come by. Well, you'll come back again.
Absolutely happy to.
Thank you so much. Roger Reynolds has been an innovative garden educator for a long, long time. And we have a lot of, he gave us a lot of information that we've posted on my Facebook page, as well as links to his main sites. And I hope you'll take advantage of the information that he's provided, because there's a lot, he's got a lot of really good information out there. Great way to enrich our soil and get use out of those kitchen scraps. Coming up next, we're going to talk about another green innovation, some research into bioenergy crops that can be grown in Wisconsin. So please stay with us right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.